Good Monday morning here in DFW, and welcome to Mavsland. This is your host, Isaac Harris of the Dallas Mavericks and Studio 41, and man, it's a good Monday. The past two Sunday nights that I have recorded this podcast, it has been after losses, but you know what? Here we are. The Mavericks beat the Clippers. Finally, we're through with the series. And today's Monday, starting a new week, and we start a brand new series against the Oklahoma City Thunder. And guys, if you're watching on YouTube, this is what I need you to do. Drop your series prediction. At the very end of this podcast, I'm going to drop my series prediction on here. But in the comments, that actually helped the show. If you left a comment, or if you liked it on YouTube, or you subscribed, or if you listen on Apple Podcasts, doing a five-star review, five-star. If you don't leave five-star, four-star is okay. But leave your series prediction on YouTube if you're watching there, OKC Dallas, what happens in this series. I'm about to do an extensive breakdown of OKC Dallas and spend a lot of time with OKC over the weekend. Figuratively, wasn't there physically. But yeah, I think it's gonna be a fascinating series. And before I dive into it, I just want to do like 3 minutes here, and I want to hand out some flowers. I feel like we have to just hand in out flowers just for that Clippers series. I'm not going to do very much in it because, hey, we turned the page in the sports world. We're already focused on OKC. We're kind of done with the Clippers. But a couple things here from the last series. Jason Kidd, he deserves some flowers for the last series. The defensive game plan, what they pulled off on the defensive end of the basketball, holding the Clippers under 100 points, four out of six games, all the four wins. I mean, it's just, I know they're missing Kawhi, but just some of the coaching stuff in the series, thought he did a pretty dang good job. I think he deserves some credit with that. Kyrie Irving, you deserve some flowers. Kyrie's just remarkable. I mean, some of the stuff he's pulling off in this second half of game six there in Dallas was just, I mean, I'll never forget that atmosphere. And some of the stuff he's pulling off, sitting next to Bobby and us reacting to that. If you haven't watched our post-game stream, Bobby and I go live from the Studio 41 there in the Mavs offices after after wins in the playoffs. So we went live after that game, and it was a late night, but it was a fun late night. Got to give flowers to Luka, battling through that knee injury, putting up the numbers he did. You got to give flowers to Luka. They don't win this series without Luka putting up the numbers he did. Two other ones real quick before we dive into Mavs OKC. Derrick Jones Jr., some of the best individual perimeter defense I've seen from a Mavericks player in a really long time. And some of the stuff he did on Paul George, switching off on James Harden, the versatility, just overall play from Derrick Jones Jr., somebody that you literally just went out and got this this offseason on a vet minimum contract, and you brought him in here, and now he's killing it in his role. And love watching him play. Mavs fans, I know a bunch of you guys love him too. Lastly, I mean, we could go across the board with there's so many different Mavs contributed. Last one I want to give flowers to is Derek Lively. Derek Lively, a rookie in the playoffs, and just the efficient basketball that he played, some of the stuff, just the minutes coming off the bench and Gafford starting, and just how efficient he was against Zubats, and the energy, rebounding and blocking shots, the oops, like just, yeah. I mean, for a rookie, it's so dang impressive watching play. So there's the flowers from last series. If we did this podcast on Friday night, we would do a whole show on it. But let's talk about OKC. So I want to kind of go through, this is how I want to do this. All right. I want to do like kind of a mini profile on OKC. Then I want to go through some stat battles that I'm really watching for this series. And then we'll look at some matchups. And at the end, I always do on the last page or quick hitters, but I'm actually going to replace it this week for a new segment. I'm replacing it called Predict the Storyline. All right. Little predicties at the end of the pod, and predict the storyline. So I'm going to predict some of the storylines that are going to come out of the series, and some different pathways that if the series goes down, what the storyline will be in like national media and all of that. So might have some fun with that one. Maybe. Oklahoma City Thunder, number one seed in the Western Conference. And boy, did they earn it. I was texting Bobby over the weekend, and you know, I was just deep diving all kinds of stuff on OKC, their synergy stuff, second spectrum, watching film, looking at some of our past matchups with them, watching some of their, you know, Pelican stuff. I'm like, dang, this is like not fun to look at, like from an opponent standpoint, because they're good in everything. And I mean, rightfully so, they're a top seed in your conference. But they're a top five offense and defense. You know how rare that is, first off, like to be top five in offense rating, top five in defensive rating, just super rare to do. They had a coach of the year in Mark Daigneault, and they have an MVP candidate in SGA. And we all know the SGA talk, the SGA versus Luka MVPs talk. That ain't going anywhere. It's just going to be magnified in this series. But here's one of the biggest things about this team that we've all heard. They are super young, and that can work for your advantage. It can work for your disadvantage. I was reading something Kevin Pelton from ESPN wrote over the weekend, and he wrote in his piece, he just had some little nuggets there about the Thunder, not the Denver Nuggets or Chick-fil-A Nuggets. They're the youngest team. OKC is the youngest team ever to win a playoff series. That's after they beat the Pelicans, swept the Pelicans, by the way. And here's this part is crazy to me. Out of the four games in which they beat the Pelicans and they won in the first round, they had one basket in the entire series in which somebody scored that was over the age of 25. One basket all series that someone 25 or older scored. That was one basket by Kenrich Williams, TCU, played down the street, if you didn't know that, in college. One basket. Like, that's insane when you think about how young this team is. Let's look at some of the ages. SGA, 25. Jalen Williams, J-Dub, the wing, 22. I don't want to say the good one because I actually like Jalen Williams, the big, off the bench. Chet, 21. Lu Dort, 24. Josh Giddey, 21. Cason Wallace, 20. Isaiah Joe, 24. I mean, you have to get Aaron Wiggins, 25. Like, this is their rotation. Jalen Williams from Arkansas, the big, 21. This is their rotation. And then you get to, you know, Gordon Hayward, who didn't score the entire series against the Pelicans. He's 33. He's like the oldest guy that like remotely plays for them. And you're not even thinking about like Usman Jang, liked him in the draft. He's 20. Like, it's crazy to think how young this team is and how good this team is. So they start SGA, Josh Giddey, Lu Dort, Jalen Williams, and Chet. They bring Cason Wallace off the bench. We know Cason Wallace, the smaller guard from Kentucky, really good defense, can shoot the three really well. Also part of the trade, the weird draft day trade, that you know Dallas was sitting at 10, OKC was at 12. They swap picks. That's the whole Bertans thing. And then, you know, shed some money for Dallas. Dallas ends up picking up a pick later on the draft in which they take on Rashawn Holmes, and they have the ability to draft Omax. So that's where Derek Lively goes to Dallas at 12. Cason Wallace goes to OKC at 10. So Cason Wallace comes off the bench for them. Aaron Wiggins comes off the bench. Isaiah Joe. We know Isaiah Joe because he's hit a million threes against Dallas. And Jalen Williams, the one from Arkansas, the big, comes off the bench. Then you have Kenrich Williams. You have Gordon Hayward kind of after that in the rotation that they play some limited minutes here and there. They're eighth in pace, so they like to get up and down. Shocker, they're a young team, and they like to play fast. There you go. That actually makes sense. That's what I would do if I had a young team. Here's some other crazy stuff about them. Already said they're top five offense and defense. They're third in field goal percentage this past season. First in three-point percentage. So not only do they shoot the ball really, really well, third in field goal percentage all over the court, first in three-point percentage. So they shoot the three ball really, really well. They're first in steals and first in blocks. I know stocks aren't everything when it comes to defense. Once again, the top five in defense also. But first in the league in steals, first in the league in blocks. You know what helps first in the league in blocks is when you have Chet Holmgren. You know what helps when with you having first in the league in steals? When you have SGA, Lu Dort, Cason Wallace, and these guys. They're really good perimeter defenders. some areas in which you're like, hey, are they not great in something? Because that's honestly what I went into the weekend. I'm like, all right, come on. If I was scouting or if I was working for the Mavs in a different capacity, and I was like, find the Achilles heel. Well, there are none, but there are a few things that they're not the best in. They're 27th in rebounding and 29th in offensive rebounding. All right. 27th. So we know one of the biggest storylines about OKC is, hey, they're young, MVP candidate, all this different stuff. They can score, they can defend, but they can't rebound. This is why one of the things, what I don't want to say they can't rebound. One of the things about OKC, especially going into the trade deadline, was, hey, are they going to go out and get a big, another bigger body that can rebound the basketball, because they're one of the last in the league in rebounding, especially offensive rebounding, especially allowing offensive rebounds. They're one of the most, in which, you know, one of the worst teams at allowing offensive rebounds to the opponent. And they didn't go out into that. And you know what? They just kind of banked on it and said, we'll kind of bet on all the other areas, not Jonte. We'll bet on all the other areas of our game to outweigh us not being good at rebounding. Where have you heard that before? They're 26th in the league in three-point attempts allowed and 23rd in the league in three-pointers made allowed. So what does that tell you? That tells you that they allow a lot of threes. Compared to all the other teams in the league, you know what they do? They allow a lot of threes because they're really good at protecting the paint. I shot out this tweet over the... I didn't put this in my notes, but I'm about to do it off the top of my head here. I shot off this tweet over the weekend because in doing a bunch of research, I was like, man, OKC's really good at protecting the paint. And I was looking at which teams are the best at protecting the paint. So I was looking at the top 10 teams this past season at points allowed in the paint. Shocking here, but four out of the remaining eight teams in the playoffs were in the top 10 in that, if not higher. Minnesota, great team at protecting the paint. I think they were number one in that. Cleveland, right behind them. There were like three or four, I want to say, in that. That's where Jared Allen, we'll see, you know, his injury status going against Boston, all of that coming up. But Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, some of those guys. You look at Boston. Boston, I think, was ninth on that list as far as protecting the paint and points allowed in the paint with that. And then you look at OKC. OKC was also in the top 10 as far as protecting the paint. So what do? They allow a ton of threes, 26th in the league in that, 23rd in three-pointers made. Meaning if you are a team that shoots a lot of threes, here's an opportunity and here's a way to beat OKC. Because if they allow them, then you can take them. And if you take them, you better hit them. And based off the stats this past season, even though they were top seed in the Western Conference, they were 23rd in the league and three-pointers allowed. Let's keep going. I'm going to revisit some of this in regards and compare and contrast to Dallas here in a second. They're 19th in the league in fouls committed and 23rd in the league in free throw attempts allowed. All right? 19th in the league. So what does that mean? Hey, they're a really good defense, but they're handsy. Can I say that? Maybe. They like to get up in your space and they foul, therefore resulting in them being 23rd in the league and free throw attempts allowed. They give up. They opponents against them shoot a decent amount of free throws. They force the most turnovers a game at 15 a game. Earmark that. I want to come back to that in a second. And then this goes into my protecting the paint. Field goal percentage of opponents inside 5 feet. Guess who the number one team in the league is? OKC at number one. So some of you listening are saying, all right, cool. You just told us why OKC is awesome. They are. They're a great team. But there is a way for Dallas to win the series. This isn't a... I can't say that. I don't think Dallas is... I don't think a lot of people are going to be picking Dallas to win this series. Could be wrong. I think a lot of national people will be picking OKC to win this series. But I think it has a better chance at happening than what people think as far as Dallas winning the series. Let's look at a couple different things and how it stacks up to Dallas. All right. So which one of Dallas's defenses show up? Because you can look at this Dallas defense, and we've talked about it all season long, and we complained about it. And we're like, all right, this defense is looking tough out there. What, like, can they defend anybody? Can they stay in front of anybody? Can they protect the paint? What's going on? In the regular season, they're 20th in the league as far as opponents' field goal percentage. They're 18th in the league in regards to three-point percentage allowed. So people got buckets against them. But you know what changed? Is when they made some trades. And then they finished the season as one of the best defensive teams in the league. And then you go into the playoffs against the Clippers. And you hold them under one of the best teams in the league, fourth in offensive rating this past season, the Clippers were. And you hold them under 100 points four times in the series. And you come out of the series winning the series. Which Mavs defense do you believe in? I hope, and I do. I think I believe in the Mavs defense since they made the trade. Like, I believe in this Mavs defense that just held the Clippers to that. I believe in the Mavs defense that that Jason Kidd is running a defensive game plan for right now. That's looking really good on the defensive end of the basketball. So I believe in it. And I think this is going to be one of the biggest keys of the series for them. Now, a big loss for them, and I haven't mentioned it yet. I had it for later on in my notes, but we'll go ahead and talk about it now. Maxi Kleber. Maxi Kleber is one of the more underrated players for the Mavericks that, I mean, I think he's finally starting to get a few, like, people nationally, that few more people, I should say, that are noticing or recognize the importance he has for this team. It was funny. I get on X sparingly and try to get a pulse of the fan base. And I'm like, dude, it was just a week ago that I felt like half my timeline was like, why is Maxi playing? Cut him. He should never play. And then Maxi's out for, you know, this whole series. And it's like, dude, brutal loss. Huge loss. I'm like, well, pick one. Like, what? It is a big loss. And I've believed in Maxi. What Maxi brings to this team as a big is something unique that none of the other bigs can bring. You know, do we see them try to run out? Is this where we see a really small ball lineup? Is this where we see PJ at the five more? Do they try to dust off Markieff Morris and get some minutes there? I know Jason Kidd alluded to it at practice a little bit. I don't know. I would be kind of surprised if Markieff Morris is the answer to that. Not saying it wouldn't be efficient or anything. I would be kind of surprised. But losing Maxi hurts. He's going to be reevaluated in 3 weeks. So it takes him out of the series, and then we'll see, you know, the rest of the way if they continue on. But get better, Maxi. Tough break for Dallas. But yeah, I mean, you know, I said it the other day on one of the live streams we were doing, you know, Kid said next man up after the game. And the only problem is there is no next man for Maxi. You know, you lose some of these other guys and you're like, all right, well, there's at least a similar player that can play a similar role. But for Maxi, it isn't there. Like, they don't have a similar player in that, unless you look at an ultimate small ball with, you know, a PJ at the five. So their defense, it has been looking really good against the Clippers. We'll see how much losing Maxi affects that. But I still believe in the defense. Let's talk about the three-pointers for a second. So in the regular season, the Mavericks were second in three-point attempts, and they were third in three-pointers made a game. So what does that tell you? Mavs love to shoot threes, and they're good at shooting threes. Third in three-pointers made, second in three-point attempts per game. All right. They were 13th in the league in three-point percentage at 14 a game at 37%. All right. 13th in the league at three-point percentage through the season for the Mavs, are averaged around 14 threes a game, 37%. What fell off in the Clippers series? And yet they still won, but what fell off? Their three-point shooting. They dropped to 33% as a team against the Clippers and shot and averaged around 12 threes a game. That's not up to their caliber. That's not what they've been used to. And you know what they have to do? They got to hit threes against this Oklahoma City Thunder team, because OKC is 26th in the league, like I said earlier, in three-pointers allowed, and 23rd in three-pointers made. So if you're going against a team that gives up a lot of three-point attempts and you're going up against a team that is literally bottom seven in the amount of threes made against them per game, you know what you got to do? You got to hit your three-pointers. And you've proven you did that over the regular season. You got to get back to doing that now. You got to wipe the slate clean from the Clippers series and say, hey, we can't go through this series. They will lose this series. I hate making big statements like this. I think they will lose this series if they shoot 33% from three as a team. If they did the exact same thing they did against the Clippers, I think they lose the series. They got to shoot above 33% as a team from the three-point line, and OKC allows that to happen a lot of the time. Here's one of my favorite stat battles to look at. Turnovers. The turnover battle. All right. So I said earlier, OKC is first in the league in turnovers forced a game. They have a top five defense. You know what comes with the top five defense is forcing turnovers. OKC is really, really good at that. They force 15 turnovers a game. All right. Dallas. You know what Dallas is really good at? Protecting the ball. You know where they're at? They're fourth in the league in turnovers committed a game. So you have one team in the Dallas Mavericks who protects the ball and says, hey, we're not going to turn this ball over a lot. We only commit 12 turnovers a game, which is fourth in the league. That's really good. And then you have this other team who's like, well, we're really good at forcing turnovers, and we're first in the league at doing that. Who wins out? This one's fascinating to me. That OKC loves to force turnovers. They can do it. They've been doing it all season. They're the best at it. And you have Dallas that's sitting there saying, well, we're one of the best at not committing turnovers. Who wins out on that? That is something I am fascinated at. Couple other things in regards to defense. Dallas is 16th in the league in steals allowed, and OKC is first in steals per game. So we're in slightly in the – not slightly biased – we're slightly in the bottom half of the league in allowing steals, and OKC's first. We got to kind of correct the course on that because OKC is going to take advantage of stealing this basketball. Here's another thing. Dallas is second in blocks allowed. So you know who doesn't get their shots blocked very often? Luka, Kyrie Irving, and the rest of the Dallas Mavericks as they're second in the league and not getting blocked. OKC's first in the league in blocks. So these stats right here, this is one of the more fascinating things for me over this series, is who wins out. Who wins out on this between Dallas and OKC in this offense-defense battle, in that Dallas likes to protect the ball. Yes, they allow a lot of steals, but they don't get blocked very often. OKC is like, hey, well, we force turnovers better than anybody. We block the most shots per game. We steal the ball the most per game. Which one of those wins out? Dang, I need some water on this. Some of you wanted a preview of OKC Dallas, where you're getting it right now. Here's one of them that I'm watching. And this one scares me, all right? But I gotta throw it out there, all right? Because OKC likes to foul, and I say likes to foul, they're 19th league in fouls committed, but, I mean, it's still in the bottom half, whatever. OKC's 23rd in the league in free throws attempts allowed. So opponents shoot a good amount of free throws against OKC. Well, guess who's not really good at shooting free throws? You got it. The Dallas Mavericks. Dallas is 27th in the league in free throw percentage. You know who has to hit free throws this series? Dallas. Because most likely they're going to get to the free throw line. And this could be one of the bigger things of this whole series. Actually, I'll save this for later because this goes into my last segment. Is Dallas going to get to the free throw line a lot this series? Luka and Kyrie. And honestly, they should. They should try. I mean, if OKC likes to foul and they like to get handsy and get up in your grill and all of that, and they get to the free throw line, man, you got to hit them. And Dallas, 27th in the league, you got to be better than that. If you go and you shoot a ton of free throws and you don't shoot them at a high percentage, you're not winning this series. Luckily, Kyrie Irving is a 90% free throw shooter. So, although he did miss two the other night, that really shocked me. So that's another thing I'm watching, especially at the end of the games. Here's a couple other things, and we'll get to the last segment. Can they force Josh Giddey to beat them? I think this will be a lot, a very popular thing for people to think about, because Josh Giddey, if you're thinking about the weakest links, or you're trying to find a weakest link in the link in their starting five, it's Josh Giddey. Dallas did this to them last time. They kind of dared Giddey to shoot and said, all right, we're just going to kind of live with you shooting threes, and you, you know, trying to beat us on the offensive end of the basketball. You know, Giddey can get into the paint. He's a bigger body, 6'7", 6'8", and runs guard next to SGA. Really good, talented, you know, basketball player. But, you know, just like a lot of situations, when you have good players around you, you got to, other teams got to pick and choose, like, what they leave open or what they want to try to, you know, attempt to shoot. And it's going to be Josh Giddey. You look across the board at the offensive numbers, from three-point percentage to isolation numbers to driving and all this stuff, like, the one player that is the outlier from the stats and, you know, what they show is Josh Giddey. It's not a SGA. It's not a J-Dub. We know what Chet brings. Lou Dort has been shooting it really good from the outside. But can Dallas force Josh Giddey to beat them, and what happens with him then? And that will be a storyline, I think, of the season, is what happens with Josh Giddey, because New Orleans kind of did that a little bit, but he shot 50% from three against New Orleans. He hit his shots. And if Giddey's not hitting the shot, he's going to try to get around you. This is where you kind of got to give him space and kind of dare him to shoot. And if he's not hitting, what will OKC do? Will they be forced to pull the swap and swap him out for Cason Wallace? I think it's going to take a lot for them to make a change that big. They haven't had to. They haven't had to think about it. You're the number one seed, and you haven't lost a game in the playoffs so far, so why you'd even try to think that far ahead? But I think Dallas will try to dare Josh Giddey to beat them. And from a Mavericks perspective, you hope that he's not ready to do that, because I think that could be an area where Dallas could take advantage. Here's a random question. I haven't really thought it through too much, so I don't know how much, like, true or, I don't know, tie into, like, series win or anything this will be. But I wrote down, can Tim Hardaway Jr. be the best shooter off the bench in this series? And I say that because it's basically Tim versus Josh Green, but it's kind of Tim versus Isaiah Joe. It's Tim versus Cason Wallace. It's Tim versus, who's the other person I'm thinking of? Aaron Wiggins. These guys shot the ball really well coming off the bench last year for OKC. Can Tim come into the series? Can he come back and come back from the ankle injury that happened in this Clippers series and show that, hey, I'm going to be a flamethrower off the bench? And if we can walk away from this series saying, man, Tim Hardaway, he was the flamethrower, three-point shooter. He was the best shooter that came off the bench in this series. And Dallas walks away from the series winning the bench point battle for, you know, majority of the series. I think it really helps Dallas come away with this series if something like that happens. I don't know if, yeah, that could not go that way and they still win the series. So I'm not saying that that's the end all, the tell all, but that's just something I don't know. I was just thinking through earlier today. Matchups to watch in the series. Derrick Jones Jr. against SGA. That's going to happen. It's what happened earlier in the year. You know, I actually had this written down earlier. I don't know why I didn't talk about it. So they played three times earlier in the season, but all three times did come post trade deadline. You know, the first time that they played each other, Dallas OKC, was literally the first game after the trades. I went to that game with my family, and PJ Gafford, they came off the bench. Like, it was a crazy atmosphere. It was a fun game. You know, they win all the stuff, but it was, yeah, they weren't really adjusted. The, you know, rotations and all of that wasn't in place. So then the next two times that they played, the second time Luka didn't play. So anytime Luka or Kyrie, you know, doesn't play, it really throws everything off for Dallas. And then the last time they played was the last game of the season on April 14th. And that's when really nobody played, because this game really didn't matter. All right. So not a lot to go by. If you want to go by that first game, sure. But I did go back and watch a decent amount of stuff and just watched some of the possessions. Derrick Jones Jr. against SGA. That'll be a matchup that'll be just really fun to watch. Lou Dort versus Luka. Lou Dort's got that assignment a lot against Luka in the past. He's played him really well. More physical defender than a Terrence Mann. somebody tweeted at me over the weekend, said, oh, I mean, this is basically kind of the same matchup, right? SGA, and did the whole comparison. It was like Harden, SGA, Lou Dort, Terrence Mann, and like went across. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's just not the same matchup. Like, Terrence Mann's not Lou Dort. Lou Dort's a different type of defender, shoots the three better, just a more stockier physical body. Doesn't mean that Luka's not going to get his 35 a game or 30 a game. Luka's probably going to get his stuff, but he at least makes it more difficult on Luka. SGA on Kyrie. So I watched some of those possessions from early in the season, because like, who are they going to put on Kyrie? If Lou Dort's on Luka, then it has to be SGA, right? Like, they got to put SGA on him. I mean, one of the things that we've always heard about the SGA Luka argument is like, SGA is a two-way player. He plays defense. All right, well, now's your time. Like, you got to guard Kyrie, all right? And if they don't put him on Kyrie, it's like, well, don't hype up his defense anymore. So he's a good defensive player. I'm saying that. But it's just like, now's your time to kind of like put up or shut up on the defensive end. But I think he guards Kyrie. PJ Washington versus Jalen Williams, J-Dub. This will be a fascinating one for me too. Like, this will be a lot of fun. Dude, he's so good, Jalen Williams. PJ Washington's been playing really good defense. I'm fascinated by this matchup. And then the big matchup, Gafford and Lively versus Chet. Chet's just a totally different player than Zubats. Chet's can shoot the three. How does this, well, what happens with this? And this is where the Maxi thing comes to play, because when you got like Chet, who blocks a lot of shots, who helps protect the paint, best team in the league at protecting the paint 5 feet in, you know what you need to do? Try to get Chet away from the basket. You know who does that? Maxi Kleba. Well, now you guess who doesn't do that? Gafford or Lively. So I'll be fascinated by that. But you know what they have? They can dunk on Chet, right? Gafford's a bigger body. He could body him around, theoretically. You have offensive rebounding. I mean, rebounding in general. Like, rebounding is going to be one of the bigger conversations of this whole series. And I know people are going to be tweeting, but people aren't going to know what to think about it. Because there's a really good chance that Dallas could win this rebounding battle, this entire series, and it be pretty lopsided on the rebounding battle, and Dallas still lose the series. Because OKC, like we've talked about before, they really weren't good at rebounding all year, but they're great in all these other areas. So, but it doesn't mean that Dallas shouldn't win that. Dallas has got to take advantage of this. They're not a really good rebounding team. They're not, OKC's not good at rebounding the ball on the defensive end. So they allow offensive rebounds. You know who has to pull down multiple offensive rebounds? This team. Derrick Jones Jr., I think, had double figures in offensive rebounds against the Clippers. He's got to crash the board. Gafford, Lively. That could make or break the series, honestly. The second chance points for Dallas, which is one that I'm looking for. I'm also looking at how OKC guards athletic rolling bigs. That's something in the past that I've just tried to watch them more. When you're going against a Gafford or a Lively, these rim runners that are athletic, playing above the rim, how they defend that and everything. So there you go. All right, let's talk about this. This is the last segment of the podcast. If you want to think about OKC Mavs, this is your podcast here. And numbers and stats and all of that. All right, predict the storyline. Let's play a little game. So I'm going to try to predict some storylines that come out of the series based on certain paths. So let's just go with a first one. Let's say if OKC loses, Dallas wins this series. I feel like a storyline that's going to come out of this is Giddy on the Thunder next year? Like, I could see that. I can see that being a whole thing, because I think if Dallas does win the series, and I think they have a good shot at doing it, my prediction's coming after this segment. I think it's going to be because Josh Giddey struggles on the offensive side of the basketball, and then everybody's asking these huge questions about OKC with that. If the Mavs win, I can see some national headlines. Kyrie carrying Luka? Question mark. Especially if Kyrie has some bigger moments and all this stuff. And it's like, dude, like, look at Luka's stat lines. Like, look at what he's doing. Look at some of this plus-minus stuff from this Clippers series. Even though he's hurt and he's not 100%, he's pretty dang good. He's a really good basketball player, and it's, like, insane. He's still leading the team in scoring through the playoffs, and he's probably going to do that again this series in OKC. So if they win, I could just see some of the national headlines that the Mavericks win. Is Kyrie carrying Luka? here's one. I mean, this is inevitable. This is going to happen nonstop. I'm surprised, honestly, it hasn't. It's probably going to happen a lot on Monday. If OKC goes up or wins the series, I told you SGA should be MVP over Luka. How many people is going to be making that? I mean, it's just going to be unbelievable. Like, Luka could average 45, 12, and 10 this whole series, and then they lose in seven games. And I feel like a lot of talk shows would be like, see, that's why. That's why SGA is MVP over Luka. So, unfortunately, the MVP stuff is not going anywhere for the next couple of weeks. Here's another one. And this was regarding the whole free throw thing earlier about how OKC likes to foul. They give up a ton of free throw attempts. If the Mavs shoot a ton of free throws, here we go. I can see the storyline now. The NBA wants them to move on. They want the Wonder Boy to move on if the Mavericks shoot a ton of free throws. When, in hindsight, OKC fouls. They give up a lot of free throw attempts, all right? So, like, this is kind of baked into it already that Dallas should shoot a good amount of free throws. Not saying that SGA is not going to get it. I mean, you look at free throw attempts per game as far as players. Guess who's third and fourth on that list? SGA, Luka Doncic. So, they both shoot a lot of free throws. SGA, we know he's going to get into the paint. He's going to get fouled and all that stuff, just like Luka does. Well, yeah. All right, here's two specific storylines. Stephen A. Smith. I can't do his voice, so I'm sorry. If the Mavs had Brunson, they'd be in the finals. He has that one, like, in his notes on his iPhone. If the Mavericks go down or they lose a series, Stephen A. is on First Take saying, if the Mavericks had Jalen Brunson, they'd be in the finals. When has anyone seen the level of basketball that Kyrie Irving's playing right now? It's insane. Insane what Kyrie's doing right now. So, and what Jalen Brunson's doing is incredible for the Knicks. And I'm cheering for him, like, from afar. I'm like, dude, kill it. Like, I hope he does great. But Kyrie Irving's insane. And what Kyrie's doing right now for Dallas, I don't know if JB could do. My last one. Before I make a prediction, from Gilbert Arenas. This one's coming this week, probably. So just get ready. Gilbert Arenas storyline prediction. Can we just get Minnesota and OKC in the Western Conference Finals, please? I want to see defense. Moving on. My series prediction is Mavericks in seven. I think the Mavericks pull this one out. Am I going to say the Mavericks are going to lose on a Mavericks employee Mavericks hosted podcast? Absolutely not, but I actually do believe it. I am more worried in this matchup than the Clippers one. If you remember, I was really confident going into the Clippers series that they I said Mavs in five, they won in six. They lost game one. I was still really confident. I was on this pod 2 weeks ago. I was like, I'm pretty confident Mavericks still win the series. It like, I just wasn't fazed by that game one. I'm not as confident in the OKC series. And rightfully so. They're a really good team. And we just went through all these stats and which they're really good at. But I think there's some cracks in the system in that I think Dallas can take advantage of. I think that they can force Josh Giddey to beat them. Is Josh Giddey up to the challenge? I don't know. We'll see in that. Can they actually hit their free throws in a series if they get them? I think they're going to get the free throws in the series and get a good amount of them. And I'm hoping, this is a little hope in that, but I'm hoping that they're actually going to hit the free throws. Luka's going to hit his free throws. Kyrie Irving shooting 90%. He's going to get into the paint, get fouled, and all of that. What's another area that, I mean, the biggest one of this is, hey, OKC allows a ton of three-pointers a game, and Dallas is one of the top in the league in taking three-pointers as far as three-point attempts per game. Is this the series they turn it around? Like, is this a series that PJ, Derrick Jones Jr., and all these guys start hitting threes left and right, and Dante Exum's hitting threes. Tim Hardaway's back and hitting threes and doing what he does best and hitting threes. So is Luka Doncic's outside shot going to come back? Like, this is the pathway for Dallas to win this series, is to take advantage of them giving up so many threes a game, OKC does, as far as attempts, and they take advantage of that. And the last thing is, I believe in their defense. I think Dallas's defense is still going to travel. I still think it's going to be playing at a high level, even though they lost Maxey. And that's the reason. And the last but not least, I think Luka outplays SGA. And we've talked about, everybody in the world's talking about experience right now, how they have this super young OKC team. You have this more experience. I mean, look across the starting lineup for Dallas. And you're looking at Kyrie, and look at Gafford and PJ, who are 25. And I just said in OKC earlier, like, OKC has Kendrick Williams and Gordon Hayward, who are barely in the rotation, that's over 25. Kyrie's in his 30s. Luka's in his later 20s. Derek Jones. And like, you look across the board for Dallas, they're a more experienced team. They're a little bit older team. You have a guy in Kyrie that's won a title before. That's the path for Dallas to win it. And I think Luka has an all-time great series, even though he's still battling the knee thing. And that's the path for it. It's going to be a lot harder, but I think it's Mavericks in seven. So there you go. If you don't like numbers or extensive preview for a series, I'm sorry, but there you go. I wanted to cram as much into this podcast about previewing the series and my whole thoughts on it and stats and stuff to watch for. And this will be something that we can go back and look on a week from now, because the show comes out every single Monday morning, 6 a.m. on YouTube Central Time. Comes out a little bit earlier than that as far as audio wise. We could revisit some of this a week from now. Look at some of these threes and the fouls and all these different kind of stat battles is what I'm calling them for this series, and looking at some of the matchups and all of that. It should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to this series so much. I kind of dislike the Clippers. Shocking, like a lot of Mavs fans do. I don't really dislike the Thunder. I think they're a really good team, good young team, and Dagnall's a good coach. I think it could get pretty wild as far as fans and stuff on both sides, as far as Luka and SGA drawing fouls and all of that this series. But I like the Mavs chances. Mavs in seven is my official prediction for it. There you go. Guys, have a great week. Remember, comment, subscribe, like the show on YouTube, and follow Studio 41, Mavs Studio 41 on social platforms and everything with that. We'll have a stream on Tuesday. If they win on Tuesday night, that's the first game, 8:30. And we're streaming from Studio 41. Make sure you subscribe to the Mavs YouTube channel for us to go live. And I think there's a Take That With You coming on Monday also. Later on in the day, drops at 5 p.m. typically. And then, we'll go from there. Maybe a Somos. Maybe we'll stream on Wednesday. But we'll be locked and loaded for, all of your Mavs content and fun stuff throughout the rest of this playoff run. Mavs is seven, baby. Peace out. Where's the outro? There it is.